Welcome to Unsigned Hype episode 30. On this episode, I have the pleasure to talk to the incredible artist Malloy James from New York. Prior to interview, I asked Malloy which song he would play for someone that wasn't familiar with his music yet. Malloy chose the song The Hamptons. And if you're not familiar with Malloy James' music yet, here's a snippet of that song before we jump into the interview. Black silhouette, iced out baguettes. Worst pack with goons, just a wallet on the set. Stainless steel weapon with some holes from out the jacks. Flew a ting out the parish just to let us see the depth. They always gonna find your rep, I heard you was a mess. Pops in and out the crib, uncle on the meth. All of it, the different feel, you know that life contests. At this point, I need a shrink chair to get it off my chest. Never cried about it, but admit it, I was close. Water even blew a cannonballing off the boats. Sun shining out the stash of hundreds in the tote. Never tell them what I make, if they asking, then I'm broke. Realtor came in clutch with the quote, I ain't land off the coast. Put that on my mama, that's a fact. Most of you niggas never gave your mama stack. We do this shit for keeps, ain't no way we going back. Not a chance. This is Unsigned Hype. The song you just heard is called The Hamptons by Malloy James, who's joining me from New York today. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to the show. Malloy, why is The Hamptons the song you would play for someone that has never heard your music before?
I mean, I think there's not too much. It's complex, but it's simple also enough that it just sounds beautiful when you hear it. But I think that it has, if you just want to bop your head to it, on a nice little day or, you know what I mean? You're doing something, it has that. But if you want to dig deeper into the lyrics, it's me, you know, giving my therapy session, but a lot of the stuff is super relatable. And I think it's the right amount of relatability and like vulnerability, but enough of still like got a little bit of bravado. There's certain lines in there when I talk about, you know, water even blew a cannonballing off the boats. Like I'll just be saying stuff about how you came from one moment. We used to do a lot of wild, ridiculous stuff when we was younger. We was in the hood doing crazy stuff. And now we made it to a point where we could reflect. And I said, the line was never cried about it. I said, never cried about it, but admit it, I was close. Water even blew a cannonballing off the boats. I don't know. Sometimes I forget my own lyrics, but that's essentially that's essentially what it is. Like that, you can just vibe to it. You can take the lyrics kind of on a surface level, but you can also dive deep. And I think that, like, from the artists that I always grew up listening to, they always had a bit of every time you listen to it, you can get something different from it. And I think that The Hamptons is one of those tracks. I mean, it also is kind of two songs in one, so it's kind of a cheat code a little bit too. The other half of The Hamptons is just a story about a time during Fashion Week when I had a very interesting interaction with a lovely young lady, something of the romance novels. But I'll let the listeners go listen to it and see what I'm talking about. That's probably the one. That's why I picked that. You know what I mean?
It's interesting because, you know, obviously the question begs a little bit what you would expect or what you would advise people to take away from the song, you know, either listen to the lyrics or just bop to it. Like you mentioned, do you have the listener in mind every time you create a song?
Oh, that's such a good question. You showing your chops early. I think it's you have to do this balancing act, but I think that a lot of artists say that they don't mix up. They make stuff without the listener in mind and some do, but I think that it depends. But when I really boil down to it, I think that I probably always have the listener in mind to some degree, because I think that I know that somebody will listen to it and relate to it. And I think that those things are super important to make stuff that people are going to live with. I think that one of the most important things about being an artist, but especially a musician, rapper, whatever you want to call it, is that you get to make something that essentially will get to be the soundtrack to somebody's day, moment, life. Music is a crazy thing like that. Like when you find new music or a new artist or a new song, you tend to remember where you was when you found that. And it allows you to go back to this place. So I always want to make things that are going to allow the listeners to be able to take something from it and make it be a soundtrack to something, even if it's just for the moment. You know what I mean? So I would love to act like I don't make stuff with the listener in mind, but I do. I do.
No, it's so funny because you're saying that just really in my mind. Like, I had this image that popped up of so one of my favorite artists when I grew up was Cameron.
Shout out Killa.
And I was just thinking about that night when I was like 13 years old and I was at a house party where like the older brothers of a friend of mine were playing poker while the party was going on and they were listening to Purple Haze. Ooh. And like Killa Cam, the song Killa Cam was playing. You know what, that like kind of Native American, you know, sample.
Killa Cam,
exactly. And I ran home and, you know, on Amazon, you know, you could just type in the artist back in the day and then it would give you recommendations. And then I found out, I fell into this rabbit hole of like the Diplomats, like everything. And then recommended me D-Block and I went to the Locks. This whole world opened up for me.
You're giving me goosebumps right now.
Is there something that you've recently heard that you think will kind of define like the, like a new chapter in your life that you will remember maybe in 20 years?
Damn, that's such a good question. If I'm being real with you, man, there's not a ton of stuff that I feel like I listen to that really puts me in that place. I will say this, and this is going to be super interesting. I'm big hip hop head, but I make so many other genres and stuff like that. Mm. But hip hop is predominantly obviously where I sit in, or R&B, but I've been listening to, and he's not an R&B or hip hop, but I think his name is McGee or McGee is pronounced something
McGee.
I listened to I came across his last project. I know a little bit about him before, but I came across his last project, Two Star, and I think the Dream Police or something like that. And it was just, I don't know if it's going to, I would say it's going to like define my sound or change anything in my sound. But I think that I love that project, he did things his way. You can tell he did things his way. He took real risks. And I think that that's something that I am all about as an artist and always try to do with projects that I do, like throw different types of stuff on one project. You know what I mean? Have some funk on here and play some live drums on here and have a little bit of a psychedelic feel and maybe go R&B on this one or maybe sing on this one. So I think that that's something that kind of woke me up. I think that we all as artists and even listeners, we kind of can sleepwalk through music because music these days can get very the same type of shit.
That
kind of put me over the top. So I really, that's a project that I did. I know it's not hip hop, but hip hop's all over the place these days, man. The bullshit is kind of pushed up to the top. Fire shit get pushed up to the bottom and stuff like that. I will say that to add in, the last hip hop project that made me feel like that for real was the Pray for Paris. During when that came out, the West Side Gun, Pray for Paris. West Side Gun? That was probably the last one that I was like, ooh, I just like the way that this is put together very well. Yeah. The samples, even though they're old gritty samples, he made them seem polished. Like it was great, great, great stuff, great production. That's my joint. That's my joint.
Yeah.
I know that was long one.
Yeah.
My phone, bro.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Don't worry. That's what the podcast is for. You know, we're also obviously here to deep dive into your story as well. And with you talking about all your influences and the things that you're listening to now, this is, you know, at some point you were at the start of your career and you began this journey as a musician. For you, the first project, I think, was 442, if I'm not mistaken, in 2014.
Oh my God. Yo, how did you find that? You're like, yo, you good. You like the next Nardwar, bro. I don't know how you found it. I try to take that off of platforms and stuff like that. That's crazy.
Yeah, but it's also homework. It's thank you, man. But take me back to that day, you know, 2014, you know, that was almost years ago, man. Actually. That and that decision of recording that project, where were you thinking when you were doing that, and how much fun was it versus really an attempt to build a career?
Man, you're special. I just got to give you your flowers for that one for sure. Dude, 442 was exactly as you described it. It was like, it was kind of just a moment in time. Like, I was like, I used to play basketball and stuff like that, and I was getting ready to go to Europe to play professionally or to try out for teams. I had an agent at that point, and I was going to do a bunch of stuff. And one of my best friends was still cool, but at one point we were seeing each other. She lived in Toronto, and 442 Clinton Ave was her address. And that summer I went up there to kick it with them, and they were putting me on a mad music, like these two little white twins from Toronto, but they just, like yourself, just got so much soul. They know what they talking about. And she was putting me on the YG stuff, cause I was like, I ain't listening. She put me on the YG, she put me on Isaiah, the Sylvia demo ish. And just hung out, man. It was just no judgment, no whatever. It just was a good time. And then I ended up going back to New York and wanting to capture just as high I was on. And at that point I was playing my own music, but I wasn't producing as much yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I produce all my own stuff. I wasn't producing at that point. So that's actually the last project that I did that somebody else, so many other people produced on it. And one of my close friends, his cousin, shout out C Nils, was sending me beats. And then I just was taking beats from that. I was recording with my cousin in his like one bedroom with like the weird condenser USB mic. And it's ironic. I just listened to that project again randomly the other day, and I realized like I took so much more, everything felt so much light. Like I see where I had to get better and get iller with my shit.
That's really interesting. Like, because you mentioned you see today where you could have done things better. Did I get that right? Did I understand it correctly?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for 100%.
And like what, for example? Like when you listen to that project now, like how do you look at that project today from like a sonic perspective and also from a skill set? You know, I mean, obviously you were starting, you didn't have the experience you have today, but what do you pinpoint now where you're like, like this is not good and I should have done this better? Like,
man, I think that I wasn't really super focused enough on writing songs, like writing something that really just was impactful, just had more of a flow. I felt like I just was like, I got some beats, I'm going to rap on this. And I think that for a lot of us that are like rapping at or starting, or people that are starting out rapping that are just like, I'm good at rapping, we kind of get into this thing at that stage, at least I was, where I was just like, oh, he sends me beat is hot, I rap on it, that's it. And I think that there's time and places for that, but I think if you're trying to build like a really solid project, something really that's going to stand the test of time, I think that like trying to like flush out those ideas sonically and just like lyrically really goes a long way. And at that time, I just was like, trying to like bombard rap in five different flows on the same song, throw extra lyrics into it, like maybe lines where I could have maybe like chilled out a little bit and then hit him with a crazier bar at the end. I wanted to go bar, 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 bar. I think it was so much for me about proving that I could rap rather than proving that I can make good music. And I think there's a big difference between those two.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you're saying standing the test of time. Like, in what way do more complex or more, let's say, lyrics with depth, in what way do they stand more the test of time than you just rapping on it?
I think it calls for what the song you're rapping over or creating is calling for, elements of it, whether the beat is a certain way or your lyrics a certain way, your mood is a certain way. And I think it also is about rapping with intention. I think that I grew up listening to like every fucking thing, man. Like how I learned to like rap was just like, I was listening to like, even though he's not like huge on my list as far as like I would listen to him now, but like I grew up listening to like M and J and like Royce da 5'9" and like Slum Village and all like all of the, I did the backpacky stuff, and I feel like that was my education on how to rap. Well, Lil Wayne, like the mixtapes early, and I, but I feel like the people like Jay, Pharrell, those guys like got to a point where they were trying to make songs, you know what I mean? And I feel like when you're just rapping over stuff but there's no intention behind it, it can just be just words at a point. It's like you'll be like, yo, that punchline was crazy. But the thing about punchlines is like punchlines are about like, it depends how you use them, because there's a wow factor to punchlines, right? You hear a crazy punchline, you're like, yo, you heard what he said? But when you listen to that song again, if the song's not good and all you're listening to is for the punchlines, every time you listen to it more and more, it doesn't hit quite the same. But there's ways to do it when you do the punchline right with the right song. It's like Lloyd Banks on fire. I'm on fire. Up in here, it's burning. That probably has so many punchlines in it, but he turned it into a song. Like that song is crazy. Raps when I wanna, fast run, you know, like he's rocks on my wrist, throw, nana, Glock on my wrist. Like he's rapping on it, crazy. But it's like, you know what I mean? But yeah, punchlines is like every line. But there's a difference between just doing that and doing, I'ma just give you a like, you know who does a good job of that and also does a really bad job of that now at this point in his career? And people might kill me for saying this, but this is just my personal opinion. Lil Wayne does that sometimes where it's like he almost gives us too many punchlines. And I feel like he's just giving us punchlines for the punchlines.
Yeah.
And there's times where like,
I agree 100%.
You know what I mean? And earlier on when he gave you those punchlines, Carter 3.
Yeah.
Those punchlines were special. So placed, but it was so special, bro.
Yeah,
so special. My fault. No, I agree. See, you got me opened up. I could talk about.
Yeah, no, it's good. You know that first project when it comes out, like how were you worried about, or let's not, maybe not worried, but were you thinking about how it was going to be received, and how was people's feedback to that first project that you shared online? Do you remember that?
Man, I do remember. I didn't have any expectations for it. I think that at that point, you're always thinking like, you're always one something away. So, oh, this is going to blow up. You always think like, nah, this is going to be the one. This is going to go crazy. And then it really took like 9-10 years for me to get traction, for me to really start doing shows, get paid to do this and produce and all this. But I didn't have any expectations for it. The people around me were like, yo, this is fire. I always knew it was fire. I always knew that if more people heard it, it would have probably been more of a thing. But I think that I was still trying to find my sound so much without even knowing that I was trying to find it. I thought I had it. I was, oh, this is about to be my sound, but I was 100% wrong. I didn't have any real expectations for it. I just wanted to put out, at that point, it was just more to prove that I could do it. You know what I mean? I had been saying I'm going to do it. I just wanted to prove that I could do it to myself first before we took it to any other place.
I've been trying to coordinate, handing out game for the double. That's okay, not the normal rate. At this point, I'm selling stunt doubles. If she want a date, you gonna blow and flip. These wins coming, been worth the wait. Never hesitate, cause these things often initiate a slow sinking feeling from this target. Never deviate. She used to be your piece, now your lawyer trying to mediate. 5 months in, running plays, nigga. She trying to fake. No side of win when the love don't participate. Let me demonstrate how G's move. Hope you wide awake. You up in this position, cause you always underestimate how legitimate a woman with purpose will often take a chance to have it all at your expense. Your money spent.
Checks and all was going straight to her rent. But she said you in your bag, this is what she meant. Guess your lack of common sense, nigga lost your sense. Hey.
The song you just heard is called Divine by Maloy James. And now back to the interview.
It was fairly quickly, you know, after releasing that project, I think you were already very serious about, you know, starting a career based on that first project, right? I mean, didn't you like have GoFundMe pages to like finance tours and videos already like in 2015? Those were your first attempts to really build a career, right? I mean, you want to go on tour, you want to have someone support you funding your videos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look back at these first attempts to like build your career and engaging in like these first marketing initiatives, let's say, you know, what are some things that you maybe wouldn't do again and like some learnings that you've made over the last couple of years with that?
You know, it's super funny. I didn't set up those GoFundMes. I was making music with my cousin, Mark, and we had a crazy fallout. So, but shout out Mark, if you're listening. Me and him had a crazy fallout type of situation, but he was doing that. He was like maybe 7-8 years older than me, and he was really trying to like push it for me at that time. He was like, we got to do this and we got to do that.
Mm.
And so that's how that came about. And I just was like, yeah, man, do it. Okay. Let's just, yeah. You know what I mean? Like whatever type shit. And he was like, all right.
Yeah. Cause
he saw the potential at that time for sure. But I think that if I had to do things differently, because I also was like overseas at that time, like moving around, trying to make shit happen, going back and forth, I would have just stayed super, I would have been more consistent with it. You know what I mean? I wouldn't have like, you hear
with
so
the
much
music.
Yeah, with the music and also just like the mindset. Like people are, when you're starting something out like that and they don't believe or they don't see or they don't even understand it, they kind of just they say things that make you like question what you're doing. And I didn't really learn to stop like listening. I wasn't able to shut that noise out until maybe like 2019, man, if I'm being really honest with you. Like 2019, maybe 2018 was like when I was like, all right, shut up, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do.
What were people saying?
It wasn't always exactly what they're saying, but some people were just like, oh, you know, that's super tough. That's a really hard, music is super hard type shit. Or like, what it is nobody tells you, especially back home, like, or here, like, nobody tells you that they're, that the model of what a successful artist, musician looks like can look a million different ways. Nobody tells you that. Because we're in America, we only know popular music. And that's why I always appreciated Europe in those ways. I always knew that I was going to get, it sounds really funny, and I swear to God I'm saying this like, cause not just because I've been traveling around Europe a bunch, but I always knew that I was going to, everything would fall for me in Europe or in Asia before it fell for me in the US. I always knew it because I knew my sound wasn't, I'm not trying to, you know what I mean? I'm not draking it and I'm not trapping everything out. So I knew that in Europe tends to have a fresher ear when it comes to that stuff, in a way that I've always preached, that I've always said that to anybody that I listen back home, abroad. They're like, oh, why are you overseas so much? I'm like, because they have a fresher, they have a more open palate, a better palette for music, and especially for hip hop. There's an appreciation there that isn't only, it doesn't have to only look one way for them. And here it tends to look very like one fucking way. So people were just like, oh, like, oh no, nah, like you could do this or you could do that. Some people were like, oh, you know, you sound kind of like this person, but you know, this person didn't really do a sell of this, or they're not going to be big. So, and I just was like, for a while, that shit really had me like thinking like, damn, like, and you know, at a certain point, dude, like I left Europe to come back. I left, like, I had a contract on the table to play like 2 years in Nantes, France.
Basketball.
And yeah. I turn that shit down to come here to do music only for everybody that I was going to make music with to like scatter. And I was just like, fuck, this is I made a bad decision.
Is this feedback from the people and maybe them kind of like maybe trying to give you second thoughts about whether or not you should pursue this career as a musician? Is that the reason why after 442 there wasn't much output for a couple of years? Because you really started releasing music again in 2020, right? So Shotgun was like the first song.
Oh my gosh,
that came out.
I wish my agent could hear you. Like, she would be losing her shit. You're really good.
Thank you.
Sorry,
thank
I didn't you. Mean to cut off your. I just was like,
no, all good.
This year, I've
I've
done a few podcast interviews this year because I've definitely like in the past 2 years have gained way more traction. So I've done like a few. Mm-hmm. You are by far the most informed. Like, done your homework, and it's very impressive. By the way,
thank you so much.
Yeah, that's where that happened. At man, I think that I had to. I always had the plan to come back and make a lot of stuff, but I think that I started playing around with, I was playing instruments, but I always, weirdly enough, used to be like super ashamed to like show that like I kind of grew up with that stuff. And then I didn't want to like, you know, I kind of had to figure out the production route a little bit more. And I think that when I was in school, I was in art school. I got into a collective. I was chilling with a collective. They were called Slump, and we were all like making music together and stuff like that. And being around them kind of showed me how easy it would be for me to like really start just doing production shit myself. As far as like on the technical side, like downloading the DAW and like learning the shit and doing all that type of stuff. And that was when it started to, that was into 2019. And then I had linked up with one of my close friends, Rude Manners, and my dog Eucalyptus, who's on Shotgun, who sings on Shotgun, and he produced Shotgun. But songs like Shotgun, dude, came from like, those were some like the freshest times musically. Like, they kind of brought me out of like, shout out to, like I said, to like Rude Manners and like Too Ugly and my dog Liam. And like, they really brought me out of this, like this, that hole that I felt like I was in post 442. I was like, I don't know about the music shit, or I can't really get out my vision. That was the biggest thing for me, dude. Honestly, I felt like I didn't know how to make the shit I was hearing in my head, and it would fucking tick me off so much. And when I got around them, they were the first ones to get as closest to that idea. And then that's how we made Shotgun. We made Shotgun like four or five brews in, tall boys, smoked a bunch of weed. And my dog Eucalyptus like cooked that up on the SP-404 in like 5 minutes. And then I wrote the whole verse in like 3 minutes and then recorded it in like 4 minutes. And I was like, this shit is fire. We got to put this out. So we were originally going to do a group, me, him, and Rude Manners. It was going to be called Tomfoolery. And the project actually was really fire. We actually were like, had it super fire. I'm trying to get them to like find the stem so we could just put it out on some whatever shit, cause it's really fucking good music. But, that was kind of how I got back into it. Yeah, dude, that was like spot on what you said. That was the year. Like 2019 when I started warming up. By 2020, I was like, yo, I think I want to start like dropping shit. Like I strapped up and was like, I think I'm ready to do this regardless of what the outcome's going to be. Like, I'm just going to go hard for as long as it fucking takes for something to pop off.
I can imagine, because you mentioned the basketball thing a couple of times and you went to France to play basketball professionally, and that must be really, really tough to kind of, you have two paths in front of you and you need to make a decision because you probably won't be able to do both. How does that work? How do you take a decision, make a decision like that?
I think you got to go with like two things, and I'll keep it super like quick on that. Like, one, basketball is like, you only can play that for so long, and you're not in front of me, so you can't see, but I'm like 5'11", so I'm not like super tall. So I knew that if I was going to do like hooping, if I was going to hoop, I probably only had maybe 8 years tops, you know, at a good level type shit. Like, I probably wasn't going to go to the NBA. And if I was, I would have been one of those G League guys that tries to like fight his way in. But I was dating a girl told me this, and shout out to the ladies. She told me, she was like, yo, you're really good at ball. But she was like, whatever you do with music, that's like, there's something special there and you should pursue that. And I was like, whatever. And I just found myself I was by myself in Nantes. I was going to like a different city in Europe every like 2 days trying out. So I went to like Valencia, but then I was back in France. I was in Clisson in France, and I was in Lyon, Marseille, and then went all the way to like Barcelona. I was like all over the place trying out for teams. And I was like in these rooms by myself, and I always kept thinking about like new music would drop and I would listen. And I always would be like, yo, I would have did it this way. I would have did it that way. And I just got to a point where I remember exactly when it was. I was on a train, like in Nantes, they have the above ground, the tram joint. You guys got that a bunch in Europe. I was on that, and I remember being like, it was cold as hell. I had on this little Vans jacket, thick jacket. And I remember being like, I think I'm done. I think I'm done with this. And I remember texting one of my best friends at the time, and still one of my closest homies, Frank. And I was like, yo, bro, I think I'm done with this hooping shit. He was like, what? It's like, I think I'm over this shit. And I literally called my agent at the time, not the agent I have now, my sports agent, was like, I want to go back home. And they were like, bro, you just got offered a contract. Everything you worked for, you now have. And I was like, I think I want to do this music shit. I think I want to try this.
And I mean, then you really go, like, you go all in, right? I mean,
yeah.
there's a bunch of EPs, there's a bunch of albums, there's a bunch of singles. So when you really start putting out all that music, is there a strategy behind that? Like, is it just like you create and you just want to share it? Or is there, because, you know, recently I've been talking to a couple of artists who, you know, they're also just like you, incredible artists, but they choose to like kind of do the 1, 2, 3 songs a year kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes because of funding, but sometimes also because they're like, I don't really want to give it all away all the time.
Mm-hmm.
How is that for you? Like, how do you find the right balance, like in releasing the right amount of stuff?
I mean, if I'm being honest with you, dude, like, I love hearing, like, you saying that type of stuff. Like, I was not trying to put out 1 or 2 songs or projects a year. I just did not know how to translate the stuff I would play into a production standpoint. And I literally had to sit my ass down. Shout out to COVID. I literally had to sit my ass down and really, like, I just sat there for like a year, dude, and just like played instruments into Logic, figured out how to do stuff, like, and really like got super, super, super technical with it. And then that's when you got Brunch with Chanel. Brunch with Chanel was like the first project that I did, even though there's like songs like Mike Tyson out there, but Brunch with Chanel was like the first. I did everything. I produced everything on Brunch with Chanel except for We Do. We Do was a song from those sessions that I did with the homies, Rude Manners and Eucalyptus way back. That was supposed to be on the project that I said we had as a group. And I took that joint. I was like, yo, I'm going to use this. They said, fine, use that. And so it was Shadows, and then it was Brunch with Chanel. And then from Brunch with Chanel on, I was like, yo, I got to put shit out. And this year I made my goal is to do 7 projects. And right now I'm at about 3. So I still got about 4 left. So they fans could like expect 4 or 4 more projects. It's going to be tough, but
nice.
We're going to make it happen. But that's the balance. Now the balance is like, one of my good friends who makes music, Jambo, he's out in London. I kicked it with him, and I was like, what's up? Like, you just be dropping shit now. And he was like, dog, it don't make, if the music is good, what the fuck is the point of sitting on it? Put it out. And I was just, and that, it was so simple, but when he said it, I was like, all the light bulbs in my,
it makes sense.
Yeah, all the light bulbs went off. I was like, just put it out. And then that's just like what started happening, you know? So.
Yeah. And you know, you earlier just mentioning, you were just mentioning this, you know, how you really got into producing in 2020 and really experimenting, you know, with new things and learning new things. Something I want to get into with you saying that, that makes me think of, you know, this idea of like daring new things as an artist and kind of getting out of, you know, your comfort zone, trying out new styles. And when I listened to Labels, your song Labels, you know, I felt like you really switched up your flow on
this
that.
This guy is good,
immensely.
Man. This guy is good.
And I mean, actually, you did that. You had a song that, called MVP and something else. I forgot the song.
Oh, my
song,
gosh.
You really went in because you, overall, I would describe your flow and your style as very mellow and laid back. And I love that. That's an amazing style to have. Can you talk to me a little bit about like these moments when recording and like trying to switch up flows and trying new things and whether or not these like, do these things happen like by coincidence or is it something that you plan? I mean, I understand that, you know, the beat obviously, you know, makes up for the tempo and, you know, all these things, but when you try out new things, how does that happen? Is that a conscious decision or does it happen randomly sometimes?
Yo, it happens more randomly than it is a conscious decision. Like, wow, you said MVP and Sausalito. I know it's what, like...
And Sausalito, yeah.
And Sausalito. Wow, you're sending me that. You're sending me, like, back. You're sending me to, like...
Back, yeah.
Being in, like, art years. School, hanging in the Parsons building and shit like that. Like, yeah, dude, those type of tracks, like... Those came from just like, well, okay, I'll just break down the two real quick. The MVP and Sausalito was from those sessions with Rude Manners in them. So I think the best part of sometimes collaborating with people in that sense is like, especially with your homies, is that when they're your real good homies, you kind of can test and do shit because like, there's no fear of what you don't like. These are your homies. You don't really care if they're going to be like, I don't know, bro. Like, da, 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 da. Cause y'all know each other's flaws so much. So I think on that, I was like, and the best part about when I was working with them is they always trusted my rapping ability. They never were like, yo, that verse wasn't hot. They always were like, yo, do what you do on it. So that was that last era for me. Of just like, I'm just going to show motherfuckers I can rap. It still was that last little bit of that toxic part of like, I'm gonna show you how to rap. That's why you haven't really gotten a lot of those types of joints. Labels was, I was making labels, played the little joint in. It was like, I'd play like the MIDI in, and then I was like looking for sound, and I found that like, do, 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 that little flute shit. And it was that time, and I was like, I kept it simple. I just let the loop take me somewhere after I looped it in, put the nice little da da da, put the 808s on it. And then it was just like, I don't know, it just felt bouncy. I felt like I couldn't, sometimes the beat just tells you, this ain't mellow time. It's rap time.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, and Labels is one of my wow, that's crazy that you brought that up. Labels is one of my joints, man. I made labels, put it on DistroKid to be released later, and then went to London.
Something else I also came across is obviously the melodic, like the very melodic singing side that you have, was also, you know, how did that come about? I mean, Hiatus was the first track that you really started singing on, I think, right? Or did you do
this
that
guy's good, man.
Before that? And how does that kind of happen? Like, how do you decide to just like sing on a song, even though you've always rapped before? Like, does that take an immense amount of like courage, or is that something that you just tried and felt like you were good at it? Or
it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of courage. Every artist should have one person like this around them. But I linked up with one of my oldest friends who started managing me. And he kind of told me a little bit of, he kind of would tell me things kind of similar to what you're saying. He's just like, yo, you got this stuff. This stuff is amazing. Just do it. It's interesting, but I like it. And Hiatus was kind of like me knowing that I could do that. But the thing about that, dude, for me, even to this day, is it's like, I don't go into tracks trying to sing, because it never fucking works for me. It only works for me when I just say I'm going to make this, and then I make it, and then maybe like I'll start like playing with like a little melody, and then I'll be like, okay. And then before you know it, I got it in the right key. And then I'll be like, oh shit, I'm going to go do it. But I never go into songs trying to sing, because every time that I try to do it, it fucking never works. My agent wants to do like a 3-2-3 track, like R&B EP, but I'm like, that's going to probably take me the longest. That'll take me longer to do than another like 13-14 track project with different shit. Like I can't go into singing trying to sing. It just always comes out like when I try not to do it. So I'm not going to, until I figure it out, I'm not going to ruffle the feathers. I'm going to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know?
The song you just heard is called Tuscany by Malloy James, and now back to the interview.
If you do it, does it take a lot of preparation, or is there anything you need to do? I mean, obviously you're singing, but is there anything that you do differently than you would usually record? Like what's the approach there for you to be able to sing on a song?
You know what, man? The funny shit is like when singing is kind of in some ways easier, because you don't really have to say as much sometimes. You can kind of just like on Even Tide and Santa Fe, like I'm just saying like on a Saturday, you're my way. I'm not really saying anything. I'm just saying on a Saturday, you walked my way. You can't really, on Saturday, you walked my way. Like if I say that, it's like, okay, bro, and? But when you sing it, it's kind of like, you know what I mean? It's like fucking like
the vibe is completely different.
It's like earthquake. Tyler's just saying you make my earthquake. That's all he's saying. Like he's not saying anything crazy, but he's singing it. And when you're singing it, there's just something with the melodies and the melodic when it's right. You can convey more with saying less sometimes singing in a way that you can't do when you rap, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think that
absolutely. You mentioning Tyler reminds me of your instrument. I have to say your instrumental album, which I found really, really dope. The only instrumental album you put out. I forgot the name of the album.
Rock Roll.
I remember that is Rock Roll.
Gave me
a lot of very positive Tyler and Neptune's vibes, actually.
Yeah.
I felt like it was very, very, very nicely put together. I mean, completely different style, obviously, but I could tell the inspiration. I mean, at least I'm assuming it's my interpretation of it. But
no, you're right. You're spot on.
Found it to be really dope and refreshing, you know?
Yeah. No, you're spot on. Like that project was actually in collaboration with an architect. I do a lot of like work with like architects and designers and other disciplines, and that was for an installation that he did in Miami in the design district. And he was like, yo, dog, I need like pretty much a score for this. He was like, make whatever you feel like is dope. And I'm not going to lie, like, it's crazy that you say the Tyler, the Neptunes thing. I've always respected Tyler as like a peer for sure. And I mean, Pharrell is, he's probably one of my favorite artists of all time. If anything, man, he's done so much for just for like music in general, but just for like hip hop and, or, and producer rappers and people like really sleep on Pharrell. Like he's not, he ain't Nas, but people sleep on Pharrell as a rapper. Like he had a run where he was
rapping.
He gets slept on.
Raspy shit.
Yeah,
I don't know if you remember that song. It's Raspy shit was one of my favorite songs of his from back in the day.
Come on,
I forgot
Raspy
the name of
it.
That was his
you
first
can do
solo,
it too,
solo
like,
project.
In my
you
mind,
you can do it too. Yeah,
you can do
absolutely.
It too. It,
in my mind, yeah.
That project is so that project changed my life.
Incredible
production wise, it changed my life. Like when I read, I listened to it before. When I rediscovered it, making music. Producing it like changed my whole. I was obsessed. I was like, "What keyboard did?" I was like looking it up. Like I was on all the Reddit, like groups looking like, "What keyboard does he use?" Mm-hmm. And people are like, "Yo, it's the Korg Trident." I had to buy the Korg Trident, and it was. I went on it, and then that took me into a whole different place. I also that around that time is really also where I found my love for. Composing and producing and arranging and did the deep dive into the classical music, but then I did the hip hop roots and I did the Pharrells and the Q-Tips and the Black Milk. Yo, shout out Black Milk. He followed me not that long ago. And the Black Milk.
Black Milk is one of my favorite artists.
Really?
He
is the blueprint for a lot of the shit that he's like, when I first was starting to push it heavy, I was like, all right, well, if you never go as crazy as, you know, if you're never like the worldwide sensation, what's a career that you're happy with being? And I was like, Black Milk is like, was one of those people that I just transcended. He's like, I think he like 40, but he looked like he like 25. I don't know what his skincare routine is, but just was there for the Slum Village days. Lot of respect for him, look up to him in a lot of ways. When he followed me not that long ago on the gram, I like lost my shit. My agent was there, was having a drink and he followed it. I was like, yo.
I interviewed him exactly 10 years ago in Amsterdam.
Really?
Actually.
Did
I
you?
I will never forget. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
I was working for Vice magazine back in the day for Noisy.
Oh my gosh.
Platform called Noisy.
Yeah, I know Noisy.
And I had a really incredible conversation because the funny thing is I started the interview with, so my mother, when I was, I think 14 or something, she bought me CDs for Christmas.
Wow.
And for some reason she picked Sound of the City. Like completely random. Like you could have picked anything you wanted, but for some reason she gave me Black Milk, Sound of the City. And we're not in the US somewhere, we're in Germany,
no,
in Hamburg,
no,
back in the day.
For sure.
Like she was just going through hip hop pages and picked Sound of the City by Black Milk. That's
really?
One of the first albums that I owned on CD. Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah. It, crazy.
Yo, she's goated for that. I'm not gonna lie, because that
is crazy. She is.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Super random. Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. I'm not going to lie.
No, he's an incredible
artist.
He's
ill, man. He's ill. Ill
incredible
rapper.
Artist.
Ill produce production. I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
he's
insane.
He's ill, man. He's ill. Yo, shout out Black Milk. Black, let's, yo, come on.
A super nice guy as well. I have to say, like when I met him, one of the kindest people, one of the kindest artists I've met for sure.
You know, it's super funny. I found out about him also like on a whim long time ago also, and it was just like I wasn't really listening to. I had an older cat in my hood that when all of like the real New York shit was going crazy, like the Cams and all of that stuff, and I was doing that, because I went to boarding school and shit like that. I went to boarding school in like North Carolina and in California. I finished in California, and I would come back and I would kick it with my older cat, not OG, but just like an older brother type of figure. And he started putting me on to, I think I was maybe like 16. He started putting me on to little brother. He started putting me on to like Elzai and all of that stuff and the slum villages and stuff like that. The like deep dive in slum villages, not like Selfish and shit like that. And he I had been listening to Royce, but I always was like, yeah, I heard Royce with M. Like, he's a really good rapper. He's like, no, Royce is nice, bro. Royce is nice. And I'd be like, all right. So then he let me listen to
Deadly Medley.
And then he played the song called Losing Out.
Oh, Losing Out. Yeah.
And
oh,
that
track was awesome.
When I heard really? Losing Out and I heard a rap on the second
that sample.
And the sample. So when sample I was crazy. So when I got back, so I always had that song in my joint, but when I got into production crazy, I went back to that song. I was like, who? I was like, how did Black do this shit? No, he's special. We've been in the same places a couple times, but I haven't had the pleasure of like really chopping it up with Black. But I'm sure at some point I will. You know what I mean? It's only a matter of time with those type of things. A
couple of final questions before we wrap this up. And I mean, you've touched upon this a couple of times. All the things that you do next to music, which is also pretty crazy. I mean, you're traveling the world. You're in Italy. You're in France. Yeah. You're in Japan. You work as a sound designer as well.
Just got back from Finland. You're a photographer.
There's so many different... Yeah. I hear you went to Finland recently.
Yeah, just yesterday.
But, you know, The thing that I'm wondering with this is you're still in the process of building this career as a musician. You still want to take this to completely new heights. Do you think that musicians should or can, or is it easy to wear so many different hats and pursue so many different things? And is there never a risk that you would take away from extra time that you should spend or you could spend in the studio and doing more music-related things at this point in your career? Or do you think that you feel comfortable with balancing all these things at the same time right now?
I think that it's like you said, like the most important thing is like find the balance. I think if you find the balance, then it's all good. I mean, some things might have to go and change. Like, I was doing a lot of photography stuff at one point in my life, but I mean, I kind of had to put that on the back burner and just go straight music. So if it's music related, whether it's being a mix engineer and doing that type of stuff at Electric Lady or working at different types of other studios in the city or doing it for the homies or producing for this person or for that person, like as long as it's all music related, you just have to find a way to balance it. Mm. You know what I mean? And I think that I struggled at times with that stuff, but I think like even this year, like coming into this year, like I was like, yo, I'm just going to go crazy. Like I started doing like a reel a day and going nuts and turning shit up. And I think that you just have to find your flow and just kind of like go with it. Like find your flow, find what works for you. And then just like push the fuck out of that shit or go as hard as you have to go to get that to like do what it has to do. As long as you like believe in that shit, and you really feel like it's ill, there's always going to be a niche of people. That's one of the biggest things that I learned. If you just really love what you're doing and you're dope, there's always going to be a niche group of people. And that niche group of people might seem small on the larger scale, but that might be 100,000 people, 500,000 people. There's always going to be people that love your shit. And that's why the internet is so amazing now. Even as much as it's bad in a lot of ways, it's so amazing because it's like, dude, you'll get people from like all over the place that'll just hit me up and be like, yo, I found your song on this. It's like fucking amazing, bro. Like, this is crazy. Like, why? Like, you need to be da 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 da. I'm like, it's all good. We gonna get there, but I appreciate that you are rocking with it. Like, and that the past 2 years, seeing that happen, especially this year, if I'm being honest, but in the past 6 months, seeing that happen so much more is like, damn, like it's little wins like that that have, and they seem little, but they become bigger, but you're like, oh, I got to keep turning this shit up. Then you get the show in Tokyo and you're like, oh shit, like this is the fucking illest shit ever. Like I'm going to be Tokyo rat. And then that's going to lead to something. And bro, there's no
how
limit
do you get
on
there
this.
Though to this connection to do shows in Tokyo and are you performing on a regular basis?
Yes, I mean regular basis at this point. I would want it more, but I think that the universe has a way of doing it. Cause I don't know if I could do more with the other stuff that I'm doing. It might be a little tougher, mm-hmm. but dude, social media, all social media. I don't have a lick of a, like I have homies that are doing stuff, but I'm the type, I want things to happen with people that I want to like, you know, do shows or do this or do that. Social media, I just was flooding the gram. I wasn't even doing anything super crazy other than just like, I'm going to do like reels. Cause I think that here's the interesting thing. It's like you said, like I had all of this, I wasn't making shit for a while. And then I dropped all those projects, bang, 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 right? You know what I mean? Like The Shallows, Brunch with Chanel, Atelier 8, like that and all. And then I started being like, okay, well, I have this catalog I'm sitting on at this point. I think that the problem is not the music. I never thought that the problem was the music. I always was like, this is just a visibility thing. So then I just started like flooding. I just started flooding with reels, flooding reels, 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 reels. And then slowly somebody from this place would hit me up and another place would just not even like on no crazy shit, just hitting me up like, yo, I found this song. This is fire. Yo, this song is dope. This is crazy. Yo, I'm rediscovering your catalog. This is nuts. Like, and it just kept building. And somebody, like a DJ and promoter, had hit me up from Tokyo and was like, yo, bro, I found the Hamptons. He was like, I found the Hamptons. Like, how do we get you? What's up? And I was like, well, what's up? And it was just like, well, does this date work for you? I was like, if it does work for you, it works for me. Because I just wanted to go to Tokyo and turn up. So, and that's how we made that happen.
Yeah. With all these successes and, you know, so many great things happening for you, what is something that you feel like you need to get better at as an artist? Like, what do you consciously think about where you're like, I need to work on this?
It's a good question. As fearless as I am about all of the stuff that I make, I think that like, I need to be even more fearless. I think I need to work on being even more fearless. That's like in the biggest, I'm not scared to drop shit, but I have songs that I'm like, I think we all go through that, but I think I need to be better at being even more fearless. I need to like, if I got the rock song, I need to drop that. Like pop punk, I need to drop that shit. If I want to put that on my album I think that I'm starting to see some of the fruits of the sound that I've been cultivating in a sense. And I think that I get scared at times of what that will look like if I just quickly change lane, not change the lane completely. Cause I'm always going to rap and do
something different. And you've already caught an audience.
Yeah. And it's catching by the day, dude. I'm seeing it change by the day. Like it ain't like millions, but it's like 40 a day or 50 people a day or 20 people a day, like just DMing me, like being like, yo, this shit is fire, bro. Like this song, this shit, this is it for me. This did something for me. Like, or seeing the shit get added on people's playlists and all of this. And it'd be like funny names, like mental therapy, or it's like the smoke break, or it'd be like the walk on the beach playlist. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm cool. I'm glad I'm on your walk on the beach. It's like, and seeing all that stuff. So that's what I would do on a larger level. And on a technical level, I probably have to like really like respect my voice on a singing level more and like treat it better if I really want to like keep doing like R&B-esque melodics and stuff. I gotta treat it a little nicer, maybe do a little honey with lemon tea a little bit more or something like that.
What's next for you? I mean, you talked about the projects, you talked about the upcoming shows. What is the next thing that you want to achieve?
Honestly, I want to be on one. I just want to, damn, that's a really good question. I mean, before I used to say shit like a Grammy, but I don't know if I give a fuck as much about a fucking Grammy. I think what's next for me is just putting out like that next project that's gonna be like I feel like I have a lot of good ones, but I feel like I'm on the cusp of that, like that Section 80 or that Sylvia demo or that that one that's going to be like
catapult you to the next level of your career,
where everybody's like, oh, and then they go back and listen to the other ones and like, oh, he's been fired, but I'm my focus is on that next one that's gonna do that, because that's the one, and it might be the next project I put out possibly, but because I'm ready to just do that and then like put a bunch of like with the videos too and doing that, and so that's like really big, because I direct a lot of my vids, but I really want to take it to like the craziest next level, and I think that only happens when I create that project. So I just been trying to take this time out here to really like come up with like, I really want it to feel like a nice body of work, like concepts and things like that. So I think that's like in the immediate, that's what's next, because then everything follows behind that, the shows, the sync deals for TV and all that. But that project, I've been chasing that, and I've gotten closer every time I drop a project, every time. And I'm like, okay, I think this might actually, because Something Died When You Left felt like I was there, but there was like one or two tracks. And I'm like, once I put it out, I could have, you know what I mean? I could have did something a little different with that. And I think that Atelier 8, I was like, I felt like that, and I felt closer. And now I'm like, all right, I think I could dial it in, right? So
for the last hour, we talked about, you know, all the ups and all the downs and all the hard work you've put in. And this leaves me just with the last question is, what do you do this all for?
I do it for the art, man. For the art, for myself in a lot of ways. But I do it for the art. I do it for, like, all of the musicians. Like, we all get in this thing. All the artists. You know, we make this decision to try and, like, or actually we don't make the decision. It makes it for us. Like, we don't have a choice but to make art. Like, I can't think of a day that I won't ever be able to be like, yo, I'm a musician. Like, I can't ever think of that day. I don't think that day will ever come until I'm, like, actually just in the ground or something like that. But until then, like, I can't not do it. It's like basketball. Like, I loved it, but I could see a day where I didn't do it. I don't think I've ever seen a day where I can't, like, where I didn't make music or was somehow wanting to be in music or involved around. It just, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that you have the same feeling in a lot of ways. It's like, I just can't see a world where I'm not in it. So I think it's like, I do it because I can't not do it.
Malloy, thank you so much for this really incredible conversation. I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Yeah. Miles, thank you, King. I appreciate you. I appreciate you, man.
This was Unsigned Hype episode 30 with Malloy James. The track you're hearing right now is Malloy's song Southern California. Make sure to support Malloy James by checking out his music and following him on social media. And for your weekly Unsigned Hype, make sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on all socials as well. All the links are in the show notes below. She kissed me while I wrote my joint.